Side 5. The Legend of Luke by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 177.
After they've cooked us a good feast, the rest's simple. We fixes the leaks and the mainmast, chops the old mouse and his wife up for fish bait, then sails off south for a bit of sun and plunder.
Bootbrain nodded his head in admiration of Chopsnout.
Stripe me! How'd you remember it all, Cap'n? You're a clever un. No two ways about it.
The Corsair Fox drew his ragged frock coat about him haughtily, staring down his imitation nose at the astounded vermin crew.
Aye, that's why I'm a cap'n, so mind your manners, and get about your business, you dumb clucks.
Berg raised his eyes from the fire on the beach that he and Luke were sitting by.
She's headed straight for us. They've put out paddles. You were right, Luke. That ship'll land here around dawn.
Luke reassured himself by touching the sword concealed beneath his cloak.
Good. Is everything ready, Doolam?
The mouse, who had crawled up in the sand behind Luke, made his brief report.
Aye, ready. Olden's and the babes are well away, hidden beyond the cliffs, and our fighters are waiting in the caves.
Luke watched the Greenhawk moving closer to land, speaking to Doolam without turning his head.
Tell them to make every shaft count. 'Twill be kill or be killed. We'll only get one chance to capture that vessel.
Doolam wriggled off back to the caves. Luke sensed Berg's trembling, and he placed a steadying paw on his friend.
Take it easy, Berg. This is the best chance we're ever going to get of starting to avenge our loved ones. Trust me.
His companion stole a glance at the hard-eyed warrior sitting beside him. There was not a shred of pity or unsureness showing on Luke's face, just cold wrath and determination. Berg suddenly stopped trembling.
I'm all right, Luke. I trust you. All of your tribe do.
The Greenhawk was aided by a light breeze caught by her square-rigged aftersail, speeding up the vessel's progress, drawing her closer to the pair of forlorn figures huddled about the guttering fire on shore. Reynard Chopsnout drew his cutlass and climbed up to the prow. He crouched there, putting a final edge to his blade on an iron cleat. Already he could mentally hear the whimpers of the two shore beasts pleading for their lives. This was going to be as easy as falling off a log.
20.
Somewhere on the cliff tops, a small bird raised its beak to herald the dawn as day's first pale streaks washed the sky outward from the east. The crew of the Greenhawk sweated and cursed as they pushed their craft onshore with makeshift paddles. She rose on a swell and forged forward, scraping her hull into the sand and listing to port, keeling slightly as the ebbing water dropped her on the beach.
Roaring and shouting, Chopsnout urged his vermin over the side. Grab 'em, mates! I want those two alive!
Luke shrugged off his cloak. Raising his sword, he watched the savage-looking sea rogues pounding up the beach. Verg took up his position, spear at the ready, steeling himself against the wild war cries of the charging foe.
Ha-har! Let's see the color of your innards, mice! Lop off in their foot paws so they can't run away! Give me a cloak made out of mouse's skin. Yarr!
Chopsnout could scarce believe his eyes. Leaping down from the prow to bring up the rear, he saw the first wave of 10 or so crew beasts vanish into the ground. Halfway up the beach, Luke's fighters had dug a trench, lining it with sharpened stakes and covering it with rush mats strewn thinly over with sand. Vermin screamed in shocked agony as they plunged into it. Luke gave the signal, letting his sword point dip as he bellowed aloud to his companions,
"Now! Strike now!"
Both Luke and Verg dropped into a crouch. Arrows hissed angrily overhead, thudding into the vermin who were hovering on the edge of the spiked trench. Two more flights of shafts followed speedily. Then Luke leaped upright, wielding his sword as the archers dropped their bows and seized fire-hardened lances.
Charge!
They dashed forward, with Luke and Berg out in front, leaping the trench and hurling themselves upon the enemy. Chopsnout had lost his pitch-blob nose as soon as he hit the sand. He stood yelling hoarsely at his vermin crew, "Retreat! Back to the ship! Retreat!" However, they were suddenly outflanked. The rest of Luke's small force thundered out from a cave situated on the far edge of the point, armed with long cudgels and slings. Rocks whistled through the morning air, cutting down several of the routed vermin. Then they were hit from both sides by Luke's lances and the swinging clubs of grim-faced, ruthless mice. Reynard Chopsnout leaped ineffectively at the high-beached bulwarks of the Greenhawk. He slid awkwardly back to the moist sand, half-raising his scimitar as Luke's battle sword found him. It was over in less time than it had taken for the vermin to beach their boat. Luke was now every inch the warrior chieftain of his tribe. Sheathing his blade, he nodded curtly at the stunned faces of the fighters surrounding him. "Well done! We've gained ourselves a ship!" Cardo let his lance drop, obviously shocked. "Luke, they're dead. We've slain them all." Luke picked up the lance, pressing it into his friend's paw. "Aye, that was the idea, mate. Or would you sooner that we were caught napping and murdered like our families were?" There were loud cries of agreement with Luke. Friends crowded around to shake his paw or pat his back. Luke glanced up at the cliff tops. "Steady, mates. Plenty of time for that later. Some of you fill in that trench. Doolam, you and the others roll those vermin carcasses into the sea. The ebb and tide'll carry 'em out. I don't want the young'uns to see any of this. Berg, come with me. We'll have to rig up some means of hauling the ship above the tide line so she don't get carried back out on the flood tide." Luke and Berg hurried to the cliffs, intercepting Drun, who was climbing down to see the result of the battle.
"Brr, you win, Sir Luke. I always knowed he were a girt warrior. Oh, her."
Luke took the friendly mole's outstretched paw and shook it heartily. "Drun, my old mate, how are you at moving ships up beaches?" The mole sized up the situation immediately.
"That be the least I can do for ye, sir."
Before the incoming tide had arrived, Drun, with the aid of his moles, some mice, and the hedgehogs, had dug a shallow channel from the Green Hawk's prow to a spot above the tide line. This he lined with slabs of cliff shale, well wetted down with seawater. On the vessel's forepeak was a windlass, a simple mechanism for hauling up the ship's anchor with a horizontally revolving barrel. Welf Tip-Tip and her hogs helped to carry the anchor up on shore, where they wedged it firmly between two big rocks jutting up out of the sand. Now the ship was attached to the land by its anchor rope. Drun chose the stoutest creatures to turn the windlass, which they did by ramming home stout poles into the housing. Once the slack of the rope was taken up, they began turning the windlass in earnest. The young ones and oldsters had come down from the cliff tops. Extra paws were needed, so they all joined in. Windred and old Twula ran back and forth, splashing more water on the shale slabs as the ship slid forward, up onto shore, creaking and groaning. Martin and young Tim Ballisto pushed with all their might against the windlass spokes, along with the rest. It was a happy day. A sprightly breeze moved the clouds away. Sunlight beat down on the workers. Joyfully they toiled, turning the windlass bit by bit, moving their ship up the shore on its own anchor rope. Some even improvised a shanty to keep up the rhythm of the task, and soon every beast was singing it. "Oh, don't it make a sight so grand, a ship that travels on the land. Keep that windlass turning, bend your backs and push. We'll soon have her above the tide, then we'll clean and scrape each side. Keep that windlass turning, bend your backs and push. We've got to find a good tree fast, then we'll build a new mainmast. Keep that windlass turning, bend your backs and push. With pitch and rope, we'll make her right, all shippy shape and watertight. Keep that windlass turning, bend your backs and push. You vermin scum, Oh, mercy me. Beware when Luke puts out to sea. Keep that windlass turning. Bend your backs and push. Gradually, the ship slid over its runway of wetted shale slabs, finally coming to rest above the tide line, with the bow end firmly wedged between the two standing rocks that had secured the anchor. Luke was smiling broadly as he patted the barnacle-encrusted hull.
Well, there she is, a right old slop bucket if ever I saw one, mates, but by winter I guarantee she'll be good and ready.
He called to Martin, who was down by the tide line with Tim Ballisto, stowing things behind a rock.
Oh there, son, what are you doing?
Martin beckoned his father to join them and explained,
We collected all the weapons for you, see?
He unrolled an old length of sail canvas, revealing a jumbled assortment of swords, daggers, and various blades that had been once owned by the crew of the Greenhawk. Luke ruffled his young son's ears approvingly.
Well done, Martin. You too, Timble. These are far better than our makeshift weapons.
Tim Ballisto selected a short sword for himself. Martin picked up a longish, curved blade and began thrusting it into his belt. But Luke took the sword from his son and tossed it back with the other weapons.
No, you're far too young to carry a blade yet, son. Timble, you may keep your blade. It's about time you had one. You'll be fully grown in another couple of seasons.
Seeing the disappointment on Martin's face, Luke threw a kindly paw about his son's shoulders.
Martin, you don't need the blade of any sea scum. My sword is yours by right. It was passed on to me by my father, and one day I will give it to you.
The young mouse's piercing gray eyes searched his father's face.
When?
In his mind, Luke saw himself asking the same question of his own father. He gave Martin the same answer he had received long ago.
When I think you are ready.
Throughout the remainder of summer and all of autumn, the tribe of Luke worked long evenings after their day's chores of farming food and foraging the shores was done. Gradually, the once rickety sea rogue ship took shape. The hull was careened, ridding it of weed, barnacles, and other saltwater debris. Unsound and rotten planking was torn out and replaced with good stout oak, which they traveled far to find and haul back. Cauldrons of pitch and pine resin bubbled continuously. Lengths of rope were woven and hammered in between the ship's timbers. Then the pitch and resin were poured into the joints, sealing them and making the vessel watertight. Any spare food was cooked and preserved in casks for ship stores, along with new barrels for fresh water to be carried in. Luke oversaw everything, paying careful attention to the slightest detail.
Do it proper, and 'twill serve you well.
Every beast in the tribe became familiar with their chieftain's constant motto. Winter's first icy breath was coating the northern coast with rime frost when the new mainmast was raised. Berg and Drun had chosen a good tall white willow, which would bend with the wind where other wood might crack and break. Newly patched and hemmed, the wide single mainsail was hoisted, fluttered a moment, then bellied proudly out in the cold north breeze. A cheer went up from the creatures who had worked so hard to repair the vessel. Luke stood back upon the shore with Martin and Windred surveying the new craft. It had three curving sails from the bowsprit to the mainmast, with a big triangular sail and a tall oblong one either side of the new willow. At the stern was a smaller mast with one other triangular sail. It obviously met all Luke's requirements. He smiled at Martin.
She'll have to have a new name, son.
Martin, like all youngsters, always had a question.
Why do they always call ships she?
Luke had to think about that one for a moment. Truth to tell, son, I'm not sure. But I think they call ships she because, well, she's like a mother to her crew. Another inquiry followed immediately from the serious-faced young mouse.
I haven't got a mother. Will she be my mother?
Luke's eyes were sad as he replied. No, son, I'm afraid not. Windred stared reprovingly at Luke.
You mean you're not taking Martin along with you?
He's your son, Luke.
The chieftain nodded. Aye, he is, and that's why I'm not going to risk his young life out there on the seas. Beside that, Windred, you're his grandmother, so he'll have to look after you. The only family I have left in this world is you two. Now let's hear no more of it. Would you like to name the ship, son?
Martin would not let any beast see tears in his eyes, so he rushed off along the shore, calling back to Luke, "Call her Sena, after my mother!"
Windred watched her grandson dash down to the sea, where he stood throwing pebbles into the waves.
"I'm sorry, Luke. I should have kept my silly mouth shut."
Luke rested a paw gently on her shoulder. "Don't be sorry, Windred. I'd have had to tell him sooner or later. Martin's made of tough stuff. He'll grow to be a fine warrior, though the only way he'll learn is to be told the plain truth. It would be no good telling him lies."
That night, a feast to mark the completion of the vessel Sena was held in Luke's cave. Autumn's harvest had been good, and the cooks had excelled themselves. Martin cheered up as he and Tim Ballisto joined a young hogmaid called Twindle and Drun's nephew Bertle. The four sat together, giggling and joking beneath a lantern at the rear of the cave, ruddy firelight twinkling in their eyes. They had never seen such a sumptuous spread.
"Yer, look it, egert plum puddin'.
Oh, and see those lickle tarts. They've got cream on top that looks like a twirl. Bet my mum Welsh made those. Have you tasted the soup yet? 'Tis full of rock shrimps and vegetables. I want a slice of that big cake, the one with honey and red currants all over the top."
They sipped Drun's fizzy apple cider and munched hot wheat scones that contained chunks of candied pear. The elders drank special barley beer and cut off slices of celery and onion cheese to go with it. Old Twula raised his beaker and broke out into song. "Oh, the weather's cold outside, outside, but we're all snug in here, with thee and me, good company, and lots of barley beer. Oh, the snow comes down outside, outside, and winter winds do moan, but sit us by a roaring fire, and you'll not hear one groan. Oh, the night is dark outside, outside, but the soup is good and hot. Good food, fine friends, and happy hearts, I'd say we've got the lot." Amid the laughter and applause that followed, old Twula poured himself another beaker, crying out, "That's the stuff! 'Tis a feast, and we be here to enjoy ourselves! Who's got a song?"
Drun began using a gourd as a drum, beating out a rhythm on it with two wooden spoons. "Goo-er, Mrs. Welf, show 'em how we can sing."
Goodwife Welf was immediately up, apron swirling as she danced a jig, clapping her paws and singing, "Two plums grew on a pear tree, a wise old owl did say. Oh, deary me, I'm certain they shouldn't grow that way. For beechnuts come from beech trees, while Mother Nature rules. As long as acorns come from oaks, no wisdom comes from fools." Then came a little hedgehog, who said with a simple smile, "Good day to you, wise creature. Now list to me a while. Why does a tree stay silent, and yet it has a bark? And why do shadows fall at night, but never leave a mark? Though you may think me silly, I know 'tis only fair. Most any fool can tell you that two plums make a pear."
The mice had never heard this quaint ditty before, and they chuckled at the logic of the little hedgehog. Doolam poured Welf a beaker of cider, offering her his seat so that she could catch her breath.
"Good song, Marm. That was very clever."
The hogwife winked at him. "If and you think that's clever, then ponder on this. How many pears in a dozen pair? 6 or 12?
She watched the bemused mouse trying to work it out.
"Six, I think. Aye, 'tis 6.
Goody Welf chuckled. "Then I wouldn't send you to the orchard for my pears."
Doolam scratched his head and did some more figuring.
"No, 12. The answer's 12. 12 pair of pears, are you sure?"
Aye.
I'm sure, Marm.
Goody Welf drained her beaker, eyes twinkling.
But that's 24.
12 pairs of pears. Doolam scratched his head furiously.
You've got me all mixed up, Marm.
Grun patted the puzzled mouse's back heartily.
Ye try working it out in apples, sir.
Late into the night, they carried on feasting, singing and setting riddles. The fire was burning low when Windrid moved the cave barricade a little and peered outside. She shuddered and hurried back to the fire.
Brr, snow's beginning to fall out there.
Luke took his cloak and spread it over Martin and Bertle, who had drowsed off together in the corner. Windrid waited until Luke returned to the fire, then asked,
Couldn't it bide until the spring?
Luke stared into the red embers.
No, I have stayed too long already. Snow or not, I'm bound to sail in the morning.
Windrid sat silent a while, listening to the snow-laden wind sweeping the shore outside. Suddenly, she leaned forward and gripped Luke's paw fiercely.
Go, then, and seek out Vilu Daskar. Slay him and destroy his blood-colored ship. Steal the life from him who robbed us of our Sena. I'll take care of Martin, and when he's grown enough, he'll care for me. But swear to me that one day you'll return here to the creatures who love you, Luke the Warrior.
Holding his sword blade over the fire, Luke watched the embers reflecting red against it.
I swear that when I'm done, the sea scum will murder no more innocent creatures. On my oath, I will return here when my work is done.
21. It was a bitter winter noon when the ship Sena, crewed by Luke and a score of his fighting mice, slid down its shale runway on the ice the season had provided. With one fluke buried in the sand, the anchor held the ship against an ebbing tide. Even though her sails were furled, the Sena strained against the anchor rope as if eager to be gone. All the farewells had been made, and the crew had sent their friends and families back into the caves, not wishing them to stand out, tearful and freezing, to wave the ship off. Luke was last to leave. Martin sat stone-faced outside the cave. Luke could not reason with him.
Son, son, you would not last 2 moons out there on the high seas. I cannot risk your life pitting you in battle against the sea scum I am sworn to do war with. Listen to me. I know what is best for you.
But Martin would not listen.
I want to sail on this ship and be a warrior like you.
Luke spread his paws wide and sighed with frustration.
What am I going to do with you, Martin? You have my warrior spirit and your mother's determination.
Listen, son. Take my sword.
It was a fighting sword and well used. Luke pressed it into his son's paws. The young mouse gazed wide-eyed at the battle-scarred blade and gripped the handle tight as if he would never let go. Luke smiled, recalling the time when his father had passed the sword on to him. Tapping a paw against the cross-hilt, he said, I can see it is in you to be a fighter, Martin. The first thing warriors must learn is discipline. Martin felt as though the sword were speaking for him.
Tell me what to do, and I will obey.
Relief surged through Luke as he commanded the would-be warrior. You will stay and help defend our cave against all comers. Protect those weaker than yourself and honor our code. Always use the sword to stand for good and right. Never do a thing you would be ashamed of, and never let your heart rule your mind. He tapped the blade once more as its pitted edge glinted in the winter morning. And never let another creature take this sword from you, not as long as you live. When the time comes, pass it on to another, maybe your own son. You will know instinctively if he is a warrior. If not, hide the sword where only a true warrior who is brave of heart would dare to go and find it. Swear this to me, Martin.
I swear it on my life.
The young mouse's gray eyes reflected the wintry sea as he spoke. Luke saw that the tide would soon be turning.
It might be some seasons before I return, but I'll be back, son.
Meanwhile, Timbalisto is a promising and sensible creature with more seasons under his belt than you, and I have left him in charge of our tribe. Obey him. A determined smile, reminiscent of his mother, hovered on Martin's lips.
Of course I'll obey him, but one day I shall be in charge.
A great feeling of pride enveloped Luke. I'm sure you will. Farewell, my son. Rigging ropes hummed around broad-bellying sails as the Sena skimmed the deeps like a great white swan, headed west out onto the main. Luke turned for a moment from the tiller and looked back astern. He saw the small figure standing on the pebbled strand alone, waving the sword in a warrior's salute. The vessel dipped, bow into a rolling trough, and when she rose on the next wave crest, the shoreline was lost in an afternoon of snow and icy winter spume. Luke turned back to his crew, certain he had chosen fighters whom he could trust to be at his side through thick and thin. Verg, Cardo, Dulum, Call, and the rest, they stood waiting his orders, clinging to the taffrails to stay upright on the heaving deck. Cardo was not looking too well. Luke shook his head. Get below decks, all of you. Batten down everything and stay there. It's going to get rough. I'll take tiller and first watch. We have to learn to be sailors now, sea beasts, so like all beginners, we can expect to be sick. Me too. There's nothing to be ashamed of. We'll get used to stormy seas in a few days. Cardo had definitely taken on an unhealthy pallor.
Permission to jump over the side and drown myself, Cap'n?
Just looking at his friend made Luke feel queasy. I'll drown you myself if you start that Cap'n business. My name's Luke, and that's what you'll call me. Permission denied. Now get below, all of you. The entire crew shouted back at him,
Aye, aye, Cap'n!
Luke was glad they had not lost their sense of humor. It was 3 days before they were out of the stormy latitudes. The evening of the fourth day saw calm seas with no trace of snow. Luke realized they must have drifted southwest instead of holding the northwest course. A meeting was held in the captain's cabin, and Luke told the others what had happened. 'Twas my fault, really. I'm still only learning about being at sea. You may have noticed the weather's changed for the better. Well, that's because we've drifted south. But Berg would not hear of his friend taking the blame. Oh, frog feathers, mate. It's the fault of every beast here. We've all taken our turn at the tiller. Being seasick or sleepy didn't help things. Little wonder we drifted off course. Ain't that right, pals? The crew agreed, though Call had a question.
Just what was our original course? Seems to me we've just been sailing willy-nilly, eh, Verg?
Well, I suppose there's little else you can do when you're searching the seas for that red ship.
Luke gestured at the empty shelves around the cabin. What were we supposed to do? There's not a chart or a map aboard the vessel. Most of these pirates sail by instinct. I've been thinking maybe 'tis best what we're doing, letting the winds and currents carry us.
Cardo had regained his color, as had the rest of them.
Why do you say that, Captain? Luke.
Well, look at it this way. Sea scum hate the cold, stormy seas as much as we do, so it stands to sense they'd sail to warmer waters. I have a feeling the farther south we sail, the more chance we have of meeting up with Vilu Daskar.
Dulum spoke as he headed for the door.
Great idea. I'm with you, Luke. But after 3 days sick, I'm feeling much better. Except that I'm famished. Let's break out some victuals and get a decent feed inside us.
Dulum's suggestion was welcomed wholeheartedly. The crew were much happier now they were in calmer climes with a plan of action worked out. A full moon beamed down on the Sena as she drifted south on calm seas. Luke let Denno, a fat jolly mouse, take the tiller.
Let her sail easy, Denno. Just keep your eyes open and check the tiller from swinging wide in another direction. I can tell by the smoke coming from our galley there's some serious cooking going on. Better take a peek, eh?
Denno shook his head, chuckling.
You'll probably get chased away. There's more cooks in that galley than you could shake a stick at. And that Cardo's the worst of all. Thinks he's captain of the stew pot.
Lantern light and steam came from the open galley window. Out on the darkened deck, Luke shook with suppressed laughter as he watched the antics of his crew. They bustled and bumped into one another, each trying to advise or outdo the other with tips on cooking expertise.
"Not too much of that dried barley, Berg. Go easy."
"Oh, rubbish. My old mom always put plenty of barley in everything she cooked."
I thought your mom's fruitcake tasted a bit funny."
"Well, it didn't stop you scoffing it, you great lard bucket."
"Lard bucket yourself, mate. Boy, Doolam, where are you going with the salt? Ship's stew needs lots of salt."
"How do you know? 'Tis the first time you've been on a ship. Put any more salt in that stew and we'll drink the water barrels dry afore morning."
"Aye, aye, there. Chop those carrots smaller, mate."
"Carrot. I like big cobs of carrot."
"So that means we've all got to have great lumps of carrot?"
"Huh? Won't hurt you. Hey, 'tis my turn to stir. Give me that ladle."
"I'll give you it on your nose. See how you like that."
A large cauldron of stew was carried into the big cabin, where Luke had set out beakers of ale and an oatcake by each place. Doing his utmost to keep a straight face, he tried sniffing appreciatively.
That smells good. What is it, Cardo?"
A heated debate broke out over the cauldron's contents.
"I call it Cardo's Carrot Sea Stew."
"Oh, do you now? Well, I calls it Verg's Vegetable Delight."
"I did all the work, so 'tis going to be called Call's Combination Concoction."
"No, it ain't. It's Doolam's Delicious Ship Stew."
Luke banged the mess table with a serving ladle. "Enough! I won't have mutiny aboard my ship over a pot of grub. I'll name the stew. Put it down here."
They watched as Luke ladled a portion into his bowl. Blowing on a spoonful, he sampled it gingerly, with his crew looking on anxiously. Bravely, Luke chewed at the stew, his face expressionless. He put down the spoon and took a deep draught of ale. They all spoke the word at once.
"Well?"
Luke picked something from between his teeth and looked at it quizzically before returning his verdict.
"I think it should be called Crunchy Barley, Half-Cooked Carrot Lump, Far Too Salty, Hot Water Stew. So if you'll excuse me, I'll just stick to oat cake and ale for tonight's meal, mates. Eat up and see how you lot like it."
Luke wandered out on deck with his frugal meal.
"I'll take the tiller for a while, mate. You go and get something to eat."
Denno immediately stopped gazing at the peaceful, moon-flaked waves and relinquished his watch.
"Certainly smelled great when they carried it to the cabin, Luke. Thank ye, mate. I'll enjoy some of that stew."
Luke smiled wryly.
"Oh, aye, I'm sure you will."
Soft, pastel-hued skies heralded the dawn. A mouse named Cordle dozed at the tiller, a canteen of water held loosely in his paw. Call came to relieve him, sipping from a beaker.
Fine one you are, sleeping on watch. Good job Luke never caught you, or he'd have whacked your tail off."
Cordle blinked sleepily and took a quick swig of water.
"Leastways, while I'm sleeping, I'm not drinking. I tell you, Call, I never drank so much water in all me life."
"Aye, no more of that blinking stew for me, mate. You could have stood a spoon up in the salt that went into it. If we capture any sea rogues, I reckon we should feed it to 'em. That'd teach him a lesson."
But Cordle was not listening. He was staring eagerly out to sea.
"What's up, Cordle?"
"Look, land. I'm sure of it. That's land of some sort, dead ahead. Land ho!"
Instantly the ship came alive. The mouse crew tumbled from their bunks and staggered out on deck, rubbing sleep from their eyes as they followed the outstretched paw of Cordle.
"It's land! Land!"
"Dead ahead, Luke. Cordle spotted land."
Luke climbed to the bowsprit and viewed the dark blot on the horizon.
"Aye, 'tis land sure enough. An island by the look of it. Take in the bow and mainsails, Call, and steer north. We'll sail in nice and easy round the other side of that island. No sense in charging at it full sail. Right, mates, I want you all armed and alert.
Cordell, Denno, Doolam, stay with the ship and guard it close. The rest of you'll come ashore with me. Make no noise. Tread careful and follow my lead. There's no telling what we might meet.
The Sena dropped anchor in a sheltered inlet on the island's west side at early noontide. It was sunny, silent, and windless. Luke inspected the high rocks surrounding the cove. Seabirds nested in the crags beneath a jumble of trees and vegetation growing on the cliff tops. Climbing over the ship's side, the shore party waded through clear, sun-warmed shallows to a narrow strip of sandy beach. Berg gripped his spear tight, whispering to Luke, "I don't like it, mate. 'Tis far too quiet. Place gives me the creeps. I feel like some beast's watching us." Luke drew a scimitar he had chosen from the former crew's weaponry. He pointed it at a strange sight, a flight of steps carved into the cliffs. "I wonder who took the trouble to do that. Looks as if they've been there a long time. Let's take a look." In single file, they climbed the smooth, well-carved steps, which, though narrow, were easily negotiable. They ascended in several zigzag shapes to the cliff top. From above, the Sena looked very small in the cove below. Cardo uprooted something from the ground, which he wiped on his tunic before beginning to eat it.
"Mmm, young onion. Wonder how that got here."
A loud, frightening cry rang out from the trees.
"Woo-hoo-hoo! Har-ee-ar!"
The hair on Cardo's nape stood straight up, and he dropped the onion. What in the name of frogs was that? Luke and Berg began creeping forward, gesturing to the rest not to follow them.
"Stay here. We'll go and take a look."
Crouching low, they made their way into the thickets. A small bird whistled somewhere, but other than that, the only sound the two mice heard was their own footpaws rustling through the ferns. After a while, Luke straightened up. "Well, whatever it was, there's neither sight nor sound of it now, matey." Berg uncrouched, and something bumped lightly against the back of his head. He turned cautiously.
"Ho-ho! Pears! A whole tree full of 'em!"
It was a pear tree, laden with fine ripe fruit. Berg picked one, squeezed it gently, nodded approvingly, then took a huge bite.
"Mmm! Plump! Sweet and juicy, mate! Wonderful!"
Luke reached for a pear, grinning at his friend's juice-wetted face.
"Oh, greedy guts, are you eating that pear or taking a bath in it?"
Fst! Splack!
A thick piece of wood with a metal point at either end whipped out of nowhere and thudded deep into the tree trunk between them both. It was followed by a loud, booming voice echoing out of the stillness of the trees.
"See, scum! Touch not my food! Go from this place, or Waragula will tear you from limb to limb and devour you."
Luke threw his pear to the ground.
"Do as I say, Berg. Drop your pear and let's get back to the crew. Don't argue."
Berg was not about to disagree. He dropped the half-eaten pear as if it were a poisonous reptile and followed Luke back the way they had come. When he figured they were both out of sight, Luke dropped down behind a fallen tree. Berg was still wide-eyed and trembling.
"Did you hear that voice, matey? It must have come from a beast 10 times bigger than a badger. You lay low here till I get back. Give me your spear."
Before Berg had a chance to argue, Luke plucked the spear from his paws and was gone. Bellying down, Luke crawled back to the pear tree. Then he lay still, checking the area keenly, eyes darting back and forth as he searched the trees for any sign of movement. Satisfied he was not being watched, Luke picked up his fallen pear and stuck it on the point of Verg's spear. Acting speedily, he flung the spear, butt end first, into a thick bush where the pear on the spear point remained clearly visible, sticking out of the leaves. Next, Luke gave the pear tree a good shake, calling out aloud,
"Ha! These must be the pears the cap'n told us about."
Then he wriggled off into the shrubbery with his teeth clamped tight around the scimitar and lay still watching.
Suddenly, another metal-tipped wooden club struck the pair from the spear tip, and a mad, booming voice howled angrily, "You did not heed my warning! Now, Waragula says you must die!
Yaka-haka-hey-hoo!"
A wild, ragged figure hurtled across the tiny clearing and flung itself into the bush, undoubtedly hoping to come to grips with whomever was holding the spear. Luke was after it in a flash. The beast was immediately at a disadvantage, trapped with its bottom sticking out of the bush. The sturdy mouse dealt the target a tidy whack with the flat of his blade and shouted sternly, "Come out of there, you savage!" The reply came back after an agonized gasp.
"Ha-har! Stab me from the rear, eh, sea scum? You pirates are all the same. Just wait till I get out of here."
Luke gave the bottom another whack with his blade flat.
"Mayhap this'll help you, Welleguler, or whatever you call yourself. Here, have another taste of my blade."
He laid on another stinging blow, and the beast almost somersaulted out of the bush in a cloud of leaves and broken twigs.
"Ow, ow, ow, ouch! Typical vermin pirate type, what? Can't slay a chap without jolly well torturing him to death first. Ooh, my posterior's a flippin' flame, you great lout."
It was a hare, garbed ridiculously in rags, seashells, and strands of vegetation, its face stained purple with berry juice. Luke watched it cautiously as he put up his sword.
"I'm no sea scum. My name's Luke, and I'm a chieftain from far across the seas."
The hare stood up, rubbing his tail area ruefully.
"Oh, I see. And that gives you the blinkin' right to land up here and whale the tar out of chaps' bottoms with your sword. Huh. Probably why you had to leave the place you came from. Every beast got fed up with you wallopin' all and sundry round the nether regions with swords and whatnot, so they banished you from the blinkin' land. Say then, scurvy cad, beatin' up any other poor creatures today, what? Speak up, sir."
Luke was astonished at the nerve of the hare.
"Hold on a tick, flop ears. First you go terrifying my crew with your howling and wailing, then you try to kill me by flinging those funny-looking spears of yours, and then you got the brass neck to complain when you get caught at it. Just who do you think you are?"
Puffing out his narrow chest, the hare clapped a paw to his stomach and bowed curtly.
"Who do I think I am, sir? I am smoke on the wind, a creature of many resources. To the vermin inhabiting this island, I am Waragula, the purple-faced terror. In a far more elegant life than this, I was known as Beauclair Feathering Soul Cosfordingham, fondly referred to as just Beau by my family, friends, and dear old nanny. What?"
Berg stole cautiously up, brandishing a stick.
"Ah, there you are, Luke. But who's this creature?"
Luke made the introductions.
"This is the one who was doing all the shouting and throwing weapons at us. Berg, meet Beau."
The hare regarded Berg's outstretched paw suspiciously.
"Berg, eh? Sounds a right murderous vermin name if ever I heard one. Chap looks shifty, too. You know, I'm not totally convinced that you two aren't sea rogues."
Luke sighed impatiently.
"Well, we're not standing around all day just to convince you. Come on, Berg, let's round up the crew and get back aboard the ship. We're wasting time here."
They had only gone a few paces when Beau leaped in front of them with a broad grin pasted on his purpled features.
"You're mice, silly old me, what? Mice aren't sea scum. They're good chaps like myself. Have you really got a ship, Admiral Luke? Are you sailing away from this confounded isle? Take me with you, sirs, I beg of you. I'll even provision your vessel with the food I grow here. You won't be sorry. Old Salty Beau, they call me on shipboard, can turn my paw to anything nautical. Hoist me mainsail, loose those anchors, take a turn round the rigging and boggle me bilges. What? I can spout that sort of rot all season."
Luke could not help smiling at the lanky, excited creature.
"Keep that up, Beau, and we'll make you swim behind the ship to give us a bit of peace. You say you've got provisions?"
Provisions, grub, rations, scoff, vittles, tucker, you name it, Luke my mouse, and I've got it.
Luke was forced to place a paw across Bo's mouth.
Enough, mate. You can sail with us, but on two conditions. Cut the cackle and show us to the provisions.
22. The crew of the Sena spent the rest of the afternoon gathering produce which Bo had grown. They carried pears, apples, wild grapes, mushrooms, carrots, and all manner of fresh food back to the ship. Luke was wondering whether he would regret his decision because the hare never once stopped chattering.
Heave ho, me hearties! That's the ticket, what? I say there, what a jolly little ship! Absolutely tip-top! Far nicer than the great red monstrosity that delivered me here, by the left, I should say so.
They were filling pails from a lively trickle of fresh water running down the cliff face to the shore. Forming a chain, the crew passed it aboard where it was emptied into the casks to top up the Sena's water supply. Bo was chattering on as he shoved another pail beneath the running water.
Oh, yes, this is the stuff to put fur on your tail, what? Good fresh water, sweet and clean, drinking myself, you know, morning, noon, and night. Feel those muscles. See how my eyes sparkle? Have you ever seen teeth as white as mine? What?
Luke pulled him to one side. Bo, did you say a great red ship brought you here?
Indeed it did, sir. Filthy great thing. Name of the Gorleach.
Luke's paw tightened like a vice over Bo's. Tell me everything you know about the red ship. Bo rubbed his paw and looked quizzically at Luke.
Of course, old chap. No need to crush a fellow's paw. It all started some seasons ago when yours truly got the jolly old urge to go seafaring. Shipped out on a small merchant craft, trading round the coast, you know. Good crew, couple of shrews, some hedgehogs, and a mouse or two. We were doing quite well, until one night our ship was lying at anchor, and we were all in our hammocks snoring. Well, the Gorleach sailed up and took us by surprise, rammed our little boat with its great iron spike, sunk us like a stone, what? Sea rogues everywhere. Slew most of the crew, took the remainder captive. I'll never forget the captain of the Red Ship, a stoat, Vilu Daskar, cruel, murdering villain. I spent two seasons chained to an oar in the Red Ship's middle decks, starved, whipped, kicked, and beaten. Still got the scars if you'd like to see them. I was the only beast out of my old crew left alive after a while. Then I fell sick, too weak and thin to be of further use at the oar. Vilu Daskar had me thrown overboard. Probably thought I was about to die, so the fish and the tides could finish me. Ha! But I came off stern stock. My old nanny could have told him that I was a Cosfordingham, and we don't die too easily, you know. I was washed up here, and this has been my home ever since. Island's full of vermin, though. Sea rats and such, deserters, runaways, and some who've been marooned. Evil lot. The rogues would have skinned and scoffed me, but I've spent my seasons here living in secret, growing my own tucker and fighting them from the shadows and tree cover. That's when I became Wirragula Purple Face. Regular one-hair army, what?
Luke smiled in admiration at the brave hare. You did well, Bo. Tell me, have you ever sighted Vilu Daskar's vessel again?
Rather. Passed here 3 moons ago, put in for water and sailed off bound south. I hit on the cliff tops and watched the red ship come and go. You know, your ship's the first decent craft with honest crew I've ever seen put in here. Jolly lucky for me, I'd say. What?
Screeching war cries cut the conversation short, and Bo hurled himself at Luke, knocking him to one side. A rough, sharp spear buried itself in the sand where Luke had stood a moment before. Down the steps in the cliff face, a huge mob of ragged vermin were dashing toward the Sena's crew. The warrior mouse acted swiftly. Grabbing the spear, he ran forward, shaking it to feel the balance. From halfway between the tide line and the stairs, he made a mighty throw. A sea rat, slightly ahead of the rest, took the spear through his middle and toppled over, screaming. Those behind could not stop their mad charge and stumbled over the slain rat. Luke's roar snapped the crew out of their shock.
Back to the ship at the double!
The vermin who had tripped on their fallen comrade did not have far to fall. They sprawled in the sand momentarily, then scrambled up and gave chase after the mice. Weapons drawn, Luke, Berg, and Bo stood in the shallows, hurrying the crew past them.
Get aboard quick, mates! Loose all sails and up anchor!
Cordle, Denno, and Doolam helped the first few over the side and set to, turning the windlass to haul up the anchor. Wild with their desire to capture a ship, Vermin thundered recklessly into the water. Luke swung back and forth with his sword, slaying and wounding wherever he struck. Berg hit out with his spear, and Bo went at them, a club in each paw.
Yah! Back! Back, you scum!
Other vermin were coming in from both sides now to cut the trio off from their vessel. Aboard the Sena, Call and some others went to work. Hanging over the stern, they whizzed arrows and sling stones at the mob in the shallows. It was Cardo who saved the day, though. Grabbing an axe, he chopped the rear anchor free of its rope. Then, heaving until he had pulled a fair length from the windlass, the resourceful mouse cast the thick line into the sea.
"Grab a hold, mates! We'll haul ye aboard!"
Luke held off the closest foes, while Bo seized the rope and knotted it into a wide loop, which he threw over Verg and Luke with one wide cast, then ducked inside to join them. Bound together within the noose of anchor rope, they struck out at the surrounding attackers, with Verg bellowing back to the ship,
"Heave away, mates! Fast as you like!"
Billowing sails caught the wind, whipping the Sena out to sea. Every available crew mouse bent his back at the windlass spokes, making it fly around. Luke smashed a spearhead with a swipe of his sword blade, but before he could strike at its owner, his foot paws left the seabed and he was swept away backward with Verg and Bo pressed either side of him. Even spraying seawater sloshing at his mouth could not silence the hair.
"Fare thee well, vermin! Glub, glub! Goodbye, chaps! Gluggle!"
With the Sena's outward momentum and the windlass winding them in, they soon outdistanced the maddened vermin. Berg felt his back bump hard against the ship's side as Bo hooted,
"Steady on, chaps! Glub! We ain't the blinkin' enemy! Gluggle, Do you mind letting us live a trifle longer? Shaw! This seawater tastes jolly foul, what?"
Willing paws pulled them aboard, and Luke wriggled free of the rope. They stood astern, watching the island recede as the enraged mob fought among themselves in the shallows. Luke put aside his blade and took off his sopping tunic.
"How did we do, Cardo? Every beast safe?"
"Aye, they're all alive, mate. One or two wounds. I took a sling stone right across the paw meself."
Verg inspected the cut on his friend's paw.
"Nasty. Is that the paw you used to cook with?"
Cardo smiled cheerfully.
"No."
Verg gave a disappointed sigh.
"What a pity."
The crew laughed heartily at the indignant Cardo. Bo looked from one to another, unable to fathom the joke.
"What's so funny? Is the blighter an awful cook?"
This caused further laughter and more indignation from Cardo.
"Take no notice of 'em, Bo. They're all lousy cooks. You'll be sorry you signed aboard this ship, mate, especially when you taste the grub. It's dreadful. Even the fishes throw the scraps back aboard."
Immediately, the hare cast off his raggy garb and began wrapping a length of canvas around his waist like an apron.
"Lucky you found me, then, chaps. Aboard my old ship, I was voided the choicest chef to be chosen from all chief chefs."
Call nudged the hare.
"Bet you couldn't say that again."
Bo dismissed him with an airy twiddle of both ears.
"Couldn't I, though, huh? I was the cheese chosen chief of all choosers. No, wait a tick. I was choked by a chosen chief chook. Nope, that ain't right."
Luke interrupted him.
"If you can cook, then stow the blather and get to the galley. Cardo, you can be Bo's assistant. Denno, attend the wounded. You are always good at healing. Call, you take the tiller. Keep that western sun at your right shoulder. We're following the red ship south. The rest of you, trim the sails and see she moves along steady."
Bo turned out to be an excellent cook. That night he served the crew of the Sena a meal to gladden their hearts. Being a hare, he cooked victuals in generous portions, so there was more than enough for all.
"Right-ho! I know this will be wasted on you famine-faced chaps, but here's tonight's menu, what? Starters, cheese and onion turnovers, with my own flaky pastry, followed by shrimp and mushroom bake in a parsley and turnip sauce. For afters, there's a pear and plum pudding. To drink, mint and dandelion tea, or some rather good cider I found in your ship's stores. Hold hard a moment there. Don't touch a bally crumb till I've said grace, you savages.
Luke lowered his eyes, admonishing the crew. He's right. No need to get sloppy and bad-mannered, because we're not at home. Carry on, Bo. The hare intoned the grace at tremendous speed.
Fate and fortune smile on us, and of this crew take care, but let no greedy robber try to guzzle up my share.
Before any beast could raise an eye or pick up a spoon, the hare was tucking in as if there were no tomorrow. Berg passed the turnovers to Luke.
Our cook can certainly shift the victuals, mate.
Luke sniffed the hot turnovers appreciatively. Bo can do what he likes, as long as he keeps serving up meals as good as this'un.
Aye, better put some aside for Cordle. He's on tiller watch.
The Sena plowed steadily south on fair seas under a waning moon. Weary after the day's exertions, her crew lay down to rest, though food seemed to have the opposite effect on the garrulous cook. Bo quoted endless rhymes, danced and sang ceaselessly, now that he was not alone but in the company of friends. Luke sent him on deck to guard the tiller, and he did a double watch, serenading the sea and the night skies. Doolam wadded his cloak about both ears, complaining bitterly, "A good cook he may be, but a tuneful singer he ain't. Sounds like some beast attacking a plank with a rusty saw out there.
Oi! Give your gob a rest, will you, Bo?"
But insults and pleas had no effect on the off-key warbler.
"Oh, flunky-dee and a rum-tum-tum, the good ship Flinky-Dog set sail with a crew of fishes and fat old Cap'n Frog. Oh, doodle-day, make way, the frog said to the fishes. All fins on deck, and use your tails to wash these dirty dishes. Oh, skittle-dee-doo, a fig for you, the fish crew boldly cried. Just chuck 'em in the ocean. They'll be washed up by the tide. 'Tis mutiny. Oh, woe is me. The frog did croak so sad. If I'd a crew of boiler crabs, they'd not behave so bad. 'Twas after dark, a passing shark heard what was going on. So, for his team, impartially, he ate up everyone. Oh, goodness me. Ho, ho, hee, hee. The shark smiled. Lack-a-day, I can't abide a feckless frog, nor fish who won't obey.
Bo neatly dodged an apple core flung at him from the cabin. His ears stood up indignantly.
Rotten bounders! Fancy chucking missiles at a chap who's doing his level best to sing you to sleep, ungrateful cads!
He was answered by an irate bellow.
You great lanky lollop-eared breeze barrel, shut up!
Bo lay back on the deck, tending the tiller with a long footpaw.
A wink's as good as a nod to me, old lad. If you don't appreciate good music, then I'll withdraw the privilege of my melodious meanderings. But I'll finish this little ditty first. Stay calm. There's only another 46 verses to go.
23. In the following weeks, the Sena covered many sea leagues. They were well out of the cold latitudes, and the weather became almost tropical, with constant sunshine beating down out of clear blue skies. But Luke was getting edgy and frustrated. There had been no sign of the red ship, which could be anywhere in the trackless wastes of ocean they were searching. Between them, he and Denno began drawing up a chart from the northern shores to the isle where Bo had lived and onward. Luke was disappointed that there were no other landfalls to act as route markers.
"We're sailing blind, mate. At least if we sighted land, there might be some news of the red ship. But all we've seen for ages now is nothing but sea on every horizon."
Denno put aside his quill pen, nodding agreement.
"Aye, we could do with taking on some fresh water, too, and the supplies are running low. That hare must think his one job in life is dishing up mountains of victuals to the crew. Look at the stomach I've put on!"
Luke, however, was not about to criticize his cook.
"You leave old Bo out of this, Denno. That hare can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned, mate. I never tasted such wonderful food in all my seasons."
But Denno's words proved prophetic. It was on the afternoon of the following day that Verg scraped bottom of one water cask with the dipper.
If we don't sight land soon, then I reckon we're in trouble, matey. Water's all but finished.
Bo emerged from his galley swinging a ladle.
No water? Well, we'll have to make do with cider and whatnot. Cardo, what's the jolly old position on drinks other than water? You're my assistant sea cook.
There was a rattling and scuttling from the galley, then Cardo popped a mournful face around the door.
Down to the dregs, Bo, down to the very dregs.
The irrepressible Bo began climbing the rope ladder of the center mast.
Well, no use standing around with a face like a squashed apple, comrade of mine. Just have to scan the bloomin' horizon for land, what?
Cardo cast a withering glance up at Bo.
Oh, just like that?
The hare was now clinging to the mainmast top, one paw shading his eyes as he gazed eagerly all around.
Well, of course just like that, you silly fat mouse. Hello there, chaps. Is that a smudge way out to the southwest? Land ho! Or at least I'll bet it's something jolly close to land. Ha! Well done, that hare. Mention in dispatches. Maybe jot down a line of praise or two in the ship's log at the very least.
Luke shoved Denno playfully.
You see, matey, told you I wouldn't have a word said against old Bo. Cordle, set a course southwest. If that's land, we might make it before tomorrow morning.
Tacking against the prevailing breezes, the Sena lay off the island 3 hours before dawn. A huge cone of what Luke took to be an extinct volcano reared dark and forbidding against the night sky. Though it was difficult to see much in the darkness, Bo noted that there were forests of trees growing on the slopes and a shoreline of pines. Luke spoke his thoughts to the hare as he sized up the situation.
We'd best stay offshore until 'tis light. There might be reefs twixt here and the beach. Don't see any signs of life ashore, but we'd best not chance anything until daylight. You go and get a bit of shut-eye with the crew, Bo. I'll call you when 'tis light.
Wouldn't think of it, old lad. You and I shall stand watch together till the raven-winged shades of night are flown and earth is reborn in fiery sunlight today.
Luke leaned on the taffrail, eyes searching the shoreline.
Well said, Bo. Very poetic, mate.
The talkative hare perked up.
Thank you kindly, Luke. I'm rather glad you appreciate poetry. Here's a modest effort I composed myself to while away the hours back on my island. A mole and a duck went strolling one day.
Luke's strong paws clamped around Bo's jaws, holding his mouth tight shut.
Either be quiet or go to sleep. If you don't, I'll put you to sleep with a belaying pin.
As dawn broke, Luke roused the crew, and they sailed cautiously in toward the shore. Now the island could be viewed clearly. The beach was dark, bluey-black volcanic sand. A thin plume of white smoke drifted lazily from the top of the rock cone which dominated the place, denoting that the volcano was not altogether extinct. Purple and scarlet flowers bloomed thick in the foothills, and many of the trees had huge, spear-shaped leaves. It was an exotic scene, though total silence made it rather sinister. As Berg watched the Sena's prow nose into the sandy shallows, he conveyed his misgivings to Luke.
I'm getting that same feeling I had last time we came to an island. I don't like it, matey. Too quiet for a place that looks so fertile. There's got to be some sort of creatures living here.
Luke pointed to the shore.
You're right, Berg. See there, slightly above the tide line? What do you make of that?
Bo elbowed his way to the prow.
A great pile of fruit! The creatures must be jolly friendly leaving a gift like that for us.
Luke frowned.
Too friendly, perhaps. Let's not be too hasty. There's something about this little offering that doesn't ring true.
But Bo was already leaping the side.
Come on, you chaps! I'll be food taster. My stomach's as steady as a jolly old rock. What?
Before Luke could stop them, most of the crew had followed the hare, bounding overboard into the shallows and splashing ashore toward the heap of luscious fruit piled on the beach. Berg chuckled as the hare picked a grape, tossed it, and caught it deftly in his mouth. He waited a few seconds, and then waved a large bunch of wild grapes at the ship.
Still standing, me hearties! Delicious!
Come on, everyone! Tuck in!
Luke and Berg watched as they all pounced hungrily on the mysterious gift.
Ahoy, Bo! Called Berg. Bring some back for us!
Right you are, Berg! I say, chuck the empty casks overboard and we'll see if we can find a stream to fill them from.
Being the only two left on board, Berg and Luke rolled all the casks out and tipped them over the side. Berg tied the tiller in position so the ship would not drift.
I was wrong, Luke. This island seems quite friendly now. Perhaps Bo was right, and whoever left the fruit out doesn't mean us any harm. Mayhap they'll show themselves before the day's out.
A stream of fresh water actually flowed across the shore, not far from the heap of fruit. Doolan and Cardo filled the casks and got them back to the ship. Luke rigged a rope through the mainsail's top block, and between them he and Berg hoisted the casks of water aboard. Doolan and Cardo waded back to join their friends ashore. Luke called after them,
"Make the most of it! Tell the crew I want them back on deck by sunset. We sail at first tide tomorrow."
Luke was busy stowing the casks in the galley when Berg shouted urgently from out on deck,
"On shore, mate! Come and see!"
He left what he was doing and hurried out. Some of the crew were lying down amid the fruit. Some were sitting aimlessly nearby, while one or two of the remainder were staggering oddly about. All appeared to have slack grins on their faces. Luke yelled,
"Ahoy, Call! Doolum! Bo! What's the matter, mates?"
Doolum collapsed on the sand. Call fell on top of him. Only Bo remained standing. The hare gave a faint giggle, tried to wave, then his legs gave out and he sat down awkwardly, staring at the ship, smiling foolishly. Luke smote the taffrail.
"That fruit! I should have known it! Come on, Berg!"
But Berg was pointing to where the foothills met the shore.
"Wait! Those bushes are moving!"
Halfway over the side, Luke checked himself. He could scarcely believe his eyes. The entire hillside had come to life. Literally hundreds of bushes were moving across the shore in a massive screen of foliage. On instinct, he leaped back aboard and dragged Berg down flat. A veritable hail of missiles struck the boat, arrows, javelins, spears, and stones. Drums began pounding aloud, and an eerie wailing rose from the bushes, followed by another salvo of missiles. Luke grabbed a long boat hook.
"Get your spear, Berg! Pull her off into deeper water!"
Scurrying forward, they pushed the vessel into the ebb tide, grunting with exertion as they pressed hard against their poles. An arrow thwacked into Verg's shoulder, and Luke ignored a deep javelin graze across his cheek.
"Push, Berg! Let's give it all we've got, mate!"
The Sena's keel scraped free of the sand. Luke dashed recklessly astern and slashed the rope which held the tiller rigid. Wheeling sideways, the Sena caught the tide. Luke flattened himself as another rain of death peppered the ship. Then she was bow out, sailing free. Arrows sticking up from the deck timbers as if from a pincushion snapped against Luke's footpaws as he dashed back to Verg's side. Wincing, the brave mouse tugged the shaft from his shoulder.
"Lucky that arrow's flight was near spent, and my tunic's a good thicken. I'm not bad hurt, Luke. What about you?"
Luke pawed blood from the cut on his cheek.
"Only a scratch, mate. I'll live. Whoever they are, 'tis plain they can't shoot straight. Great seasons, look!"
Berg stared in amazement at the diminishing shoreline. Silent and deserted the beach lay, as if no beast had ever been there. All that remained was a pile of squashed fruit. Berg turned in bewilderment to his friend.
"Where have they gone? Denno, Cordle, Bo, the whole crew are gone. What do we do now?"
Grim-faced, Luke gazed at the shoreline, his warrior blood pounding furiously as he strove to control himself.
"Let's make sail. It'll look as if we're running away. We'll wait till dark, Berg. Then we'll go back and get 'em."
Drums pounded everywhere. At first, Cardo thought they were inside his skull, causing a massive headache that woke him. However, he saw that they were all too real when he opened his eyes. It was a scene that turned his blood to ice water, though strangely, everything was wrong side up.
like the rest of his crewmates, he had been bound tight and slung lengthwise on a stout pole so that his head hung down. The poles had been hoisted up on ropes close to the ceiling of a big cave with a fire burning at its center. Rock ledges had been carved around the cave walls in tiers, and these were crowded with hundreds of small, fierce, rat-like rodents, unlike any Cardo had ever seen. They were covered with intricate patterns of red, orange, and white dyes, with clattering seashells affixed to ears, paws, and tails. At the rear of the cave were two massive drums, atop of which 40 or 50 of the rodents performed a stamping dance. The sound boomed and banged relentlessly, increased fourfold as it echoed around the cave's interior. Crouching by the fire was a figure far larger than the rest, obviously a female weasel, draped from ears to tail with long necklaces and bracelets made from painted crab claws. Her face was daubed thick with white clay, black charcoal lines accentuating the features. Bo was hanging alongside Cardo. He opened his eyes, looked around, then squinched his ears flat, peevishly, and called downward to the rodents.
"Put a flippin' bung in it, you chaps! What? Those drums are making my old noggin throb dreadfully! I say there, you! Yes, you, Marm! Tell these blighters to desist!"
"Humph! Rank bad manners to go thumping drums like that when a body's feeling out of sorts. Now pack it jolly well in!"
As if by magic, complete silence fell. The remainder of the crew had awakened, and Bo winked at them knowingly.
"Voice of command and discipline! That's the thing to give the blinkin' troops! What, what?"
The weasel sprang upright. Grabbing a long wand ornamented with dried sea urchins, she shook it, pointing first at the captives, then to somewhere at the back of the cave between the two drums. And finally, making a long, sweeping gesture at the crammed masses of rodents.
Rabatuma, Slaris, Ya, Agorima.
This seemed to drive the rodents into a frenzy. They laughed savagely, howling back at their leader.
Ya, Marahaga, Slaris, Ko, Slaris.
Call strained his head over toward Bo.
"Huh? Hope you ain't said the wrong thing, mate."
The hare was quite indignant.
"Wrong thing, laddie? Me? I should say not. Tact and diplomacy are the hallmark of us Cosfordinghams. Hang on a tick. I'll have a word with that vermin lady, see what the position is as regards looseness from our bonds, what? Now then, my good villainous... Do you think you could spare a few of those runty types to unbind me and my stalwart comrades? Sort of save us hanging around, pardon the pun."
Ignoring the hare's request, the weasel crouched and began making mysterious weaving patterns upon the cave floor with her wand. The small, rat-like creatures pointed at the captives and chanted aloud,
"Ko, Slaris, Rabatuma, Slaris. Yo!"
Denno shook a droplet of perspiration from his nose tip.
"Phew, I'm roasted!"
Doolam closed his eyes, as if trying to block out his thoughts.
"Quiet, mate. That could be a bad choice of words. They might be flesh-eaters."
Now the rodents who had been dancing on the drumheads deserted their posts, swiftly scrambling onto the ledges alongside the rest. Casting something into the fire, the weasel caused the flames to burn green. Then she went to the drums and began tapping her wand alternately against the side of each one, calling out in a sibilant voice,
"Slaris, Slaris, Slaris."
Ever the optimist, Bo suggested brightly,
"You know, I'm not familiar with their lingo, but I'll wager Slaris is some sort of greeting, like, how do you do, or good evening, chaps. Perhaps I'd better return the compliment. Show some manners, what? I say, Marm, Slaris to you too. Slaris. How's that?"
From a hidden opening behind the two drums, Slaris emerged.
Bo's mouth went suddenly dry with fear. Even he was not ready for this. The snake's head was bright green and huge. It slid slowly out in a seemingly never-ending ripple of sleek coils. As if searching, its flickering tongue quested in and out restlessly, eyes glittering in the firelight, twin diamonds of primitive evil. Lazily, the green and black chevron coils formed into several loops, one atop the other, with the flat reptilian head resting at their peak. Standing at the other side of the fire, the weasel poked the tip of her long wand in the flames until it was glowing. Not one creature in the cave made a sound or moved a muscle. The snake was hunting, seeking a victim. The crew hung motionless, stiff with terror. Bo was not aware of the glowing wand's end approaching behind his head. Suddenly, the weasel touched it against the tip of his long right ear.
Yow! Cha-whoop!
He shook his head.
Slaris!
Not a paw's length away, the snake swayed its head, mouth open, fangs bared dangerously, hissing its challenge. The hare found himself staring into the reptile's eyes. Frozen with nameless dread, he hung there helpless. 24. The night was humid, still warm from the day's sun. The Sena came back to the island on the flood tide, showing no sail. Luke and Verg dropped anchor offshore. Verg was muttering to himself as they went over the side.
Can't tell if any beast's watching us. I hope none spotted us coming in.
Suppose they did, though. Maybe one of us should have stayed behind as guard on board.
Luke chuckled dryly.
I thought of that myself, mate. But it'll take the two of us to rescue our crew. Besides, if we get caught too, then what use is a ship to us? Stow your chunnerin', Verg. You're getting to sound more like an old mousewife every day.
They stole up the deserted beach, using any rocks they found as cover. Closer to the foothills, Verg held up a paw.
Shh! Listen. Can you hear anything?
Luke stood quite still and listened closely.
Thought it was the waves at first, but it sounds like some sort of chant. Drums, too. Aye, that's the sound of drums.
Verg pointed to the foothills, slightly to the right of them.
Coming from there, matey. I'm sure 'tis.
Sword and spear at the ready, they pressed on into the foliage stretching uphill before them. The sounds of drums and chanting grew louder, closer.
Luke whispered, "Stay there, mate. I'll go and take a peek."
The cave entrance was a short, winding tunnel. Luke sized up the lay of the land, then beckoned to Verg. They crouched behind a bush at one side of the entrance while Luke explained his plan.
See that round boulder just uphill there? Do you reckon we could shift it between us, Verg? Aye, at least we'll give it a try, mate.
Good, but first we need to dig a bit of a hole here.
Where? Right here in the entrance to the tunnel?
That's right. Ground's pretty soft. We'll use our weapons.
Between them, they scraped out a shallow depression in the tunnel's mouth. Luke searched about until he found a sizable chunk of rock, which he placed one side of the hole, tamping it down firmly.
Right. Now let's move that boulder.
It was a large, round stone, but it moved slowly when Luke set his back against it, and Verg used his spear butt as a lever. Luke fought for control as they rolled it down toward the entrance.
Whoa, go easy now, mate. Easy does it. Just a touch more. There, that should do it.
The boulder was checked from rolling into the hole at the cave entrance by the rock Luke had placed there, which now served as a wedge to hold the boulder back. Luke drew his sword, then paused.
Those drums have stopped. Come on, something must be going on in there. Be careful not to make any noise, matey.
The friends crept through the tunnel, and keeping to the shadowed walls, entered the main cave, hardly able to believe their eyes at what they saw. Sinister green firelight flickered over the masked faces of the rodents packed on the ledges, all staring fascinated at one thing, the great snake. The reptile's thick neck was quivering as, rearing back and hissing coldly, it prepared to strike at Bo. Luke sprang into immediate action. Grabbing Verg's spear, he hop-skipped forward a pace and hurled the hefty weapon with all the force he could muster. Speechless with horror, Bo saw the reptile's mouth open wide, revealing sharp, deadly fangs as it struck forward at his unprotected face. Then, like a lightning bolt, the spear went smashing into the gaping mouth, driving half its length out through the back of the neck column. Thrashing wildly in its death throes, the snake fell back to the floor, its powerful body flailing like an immense bullwhip, battering rodents from the lower ledges and scattering the fire into a cascade of flying sparks and embers. The weasel scarcely had time to turn before Luke was upon her, ramming the vermin leader flat against the rock wall, his sword blade at her throat. "One move and you're dead meat, scum!" The warrior roared into her painted face. Though the weasel could not understand Luke's language, the message was clear. The only part of her which moved was her throat, as she gulped against the sword blade.
"'Tis Luke, mates! We're saved!"
A ragged cheer rang out from the crew. Below them, the dead snake was still causing great damage. Rodents were flung high, smashed against the cave walls, crushed, and beaten senseless by the writhing coils of the monster. It seemed like an eternity before the reptile's body went limp and still. However, a great number of the rodents had escaped serious injury, huddling together on the highest cave ledges. Several of them now grabbed weapons and advanced on Luke and Verg, screeching savagely,
"Marahaga! Lagor! Rabatuma! Lagor!"
Verg swiftly freed his spear from the snake's carcass and joined Luke, pressing his spear point at the weasel's heart. Luke kept the sword at her throat as he growled, "Tell him to back off and cut my crew loose." He nodded to the bound figures hanging on their poles from the cave ceiling.
"My crew! Cut him down before I cut you down! Now!"
The weasel raised a paw slowly and pointed at the crew.
"Rabatuma, Lagor, Ko."
One rodent, obviously some kind of minor chieftain, bowed curtly to the weasel.
"Ya, Marahaga."
Turning sullenly to the rest, he indicated the prisoners.
"Lagor, Rabatuma."
Bo had recovered from his shock and rediscovered speech.
"I should jolly well say so, you foul little fiends. You heard him. Let us Rabatumas go this very instant."
The rodents obeyed. Swinging out on ropes, they perched on the poles and sawed through the crew's bonds with their daggers. With shouts of relief and pain, Bo and the Sena's crew mice fell to the dusty cave floor where they lay groaning. Cardo whimpered as he tried to rise.
"Paws have gone numb with being tied tight for so long."
Luke's reply was brusque.
"We can't linger here, mates. Crawl out on your bellies. Move yourselves. That's an order."
Luke and Berg were still menacing the weasel as the crew hauled themselves out in a sorry, complaining bunch.
"Ow, ow, I got pins and needles in all me paws. My poor head's aching fit to split, mate. Look, that rodent slashed my tail when he cut the ropes. Huh, you should complain. My back fur's all scorched from hanging over that blazing fire."
Luke kicked the last one's tail lightly. "Maybe next time you'll wait my orders afore dashing ashore to stuff drugged fruit down your faces." When the crew were gone, Luke spun the weasel around and held the blade across her throat from behind.
"Keep an eye on those savages, Berg. Stick 'em if and they get too close. Right, weasel, we're backing out of here nice and easy. Don't move, or you're a dead'un."
As they retreated, the rodents followed them, crying,
"Lagor, Marahaga!"
Luke was beginning to understand what they said.
"Don't fret, buckos. We'll let go of your Marahaga as soon as we're out of this stinking place. Now back off."
They negotiated the short, winding tunnel. Waiting outside, the crew were massaging life back into numbed paws. Luke guided the weasel around the shallow pit they had dug, and the rodents had just reached its edge when he nodded to Verg,
"Knock that wedge aside. Sharpish!"
Verg hit the piece of rock a sharp tap with his spear butt, moving it aside. The boulder rolled forward half a turn and landed in a shallow hole with a bump. It blocked the tunnel entrance off completely,
and muffled the squeaks of rage sounding from behind it. Berg leaned on his spear, grinning.
A good tight fit, I'd say, mate.
Luke ordered his crew to get back aboard the Sena, while he and Berg took the weasel and forced her to sit next to the pile of squashed fruit. With his sword point, Luke drew a picture of the goreleech in the sand. Then he transferred the point back to the weasel's throat.
Mara Haga, see red ship sail by here? Red ship, big one?
The weasel watched Luke's face as he repeated the question several times over. Carefully, she drew three circles in the sand, with squiggly lines radiating from them, and an arrow pointing south. While Berg squinted at the drawing, the weasel tapped Luke's sketch of the ship thrice. Luke understood.
Three suns. That's 3 days,
he explained to his bemused friend. She says the red ship sailed by here 3 days back, down south. Berg dusted his paws off in a businesslike manner.
That means we ain't far behind her, mate. Better get underway. What do we do about this one, Luke?
The weasel looked unhappily at the warrior. Touching the sword blade with a paw, she tried to shake her head. A mischievous smile crept over Luke's face, and he thrust a big squashed plum at the weasel's mouth.
Eat!
She shut her lips tight in revulsion. Luke swung his blade aloft, as if to slay her with one blow.
Mara Haga, eat! Eat!
The weasel gobbled the fruit with great alacrity. Berg giggled like a mouse babe and selected a bruised pear.
Come on, Mary Haggett. Try some more of your own medicine.
The weasel was forced to down two more plums and a peach. She sat unhappily, juice dribbling down her chin. Berg turned to Luke, full of mock sympathy.
Deary me, she don't look too happy, mate. Do you think she's still hungry?
Luke passed the weasel a half-eaten apple that one of his crew had sampled earlier on.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about old Mara Haga, mate. She'll cheer up soon. Come on, let's get going.
When they looked back, the weasel had picked up a piece of fruit and was about to hurl it at them. She swayed, dropped the fruit, and sat down with a bump, a silly grin plastered on her painted face. Berg waved to her.
Goodbye, old Mary Haggett. 'Tis nice to see we're leaving you happy. I can't abide sad farewells.
Luke waved too.
Aye, and take care of that headache you'll have tomorrow.
As the Sena left the island in her wake, the crew sat sipping hot tea of a herbal remedy brewed by Denno. Cardo, voted spokesmouse by his crewmates, addressed the warrior. End of Side 5. To continue, turn the cassette over.